Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most vital segment of our society. To those of you, like me, who have come to know that there's something troubling, especially destructive, about the religious and political influences that are invading our society, as well as media reporting, military invasions, and jaundiced economic schemes. These institutions are not part of the solution because they are the problem. We're not going to resolve this issue by rearranging the color of the deck chairs on our sinking Titanic of state. It does not matter in America if there are more Republicans or Democrats in office. The fact is that it's our government that's causing the horrible problems that are plaguing all of us. So we are going to not only consider the news this morning and on every morning here on Shattering Myths, we're going to peek behind the headlines to see who is perpetrating these atrocities and what their consequence will ultimately be. And then during our second hour, we're going to engage the only source of actual truth, the only place where answers can be found to our questions, the only place where there is hope. We will consider Yahweh's testimony regarding his covenant so that we can engage in a relationship with God. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion of a lifetime, anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. As I was driving across America, and many of you know that for the last 7 or 8 days here on, I think 7 days on Shattering Myths, we've played the best of, if you will, because I have been traveling across the country to visit my sons en route to our farm here on the East Coast. What I witnessed was really the fall and decay of America. You know, it's easy to see in terms of infrastructure that our infrastructure is failing, that the systems that we were once able to build, we are not even able now to maintain. Our roads are falling apart. Our bridges are rusting away. Our electrical grid is grossly inadequate. We have enormous reserves of coal and of natural gas, and yet we have almost no means to distribute them. We have enormous sections of America that are unwatered because we have built inadequate waterways. Our mighty rivers are less traveled today because we're not dredging them sufficiently. Just everywhere you turn, there is evidence that America is decaying. The other thing that was so obvious about this trip across country, where I chose to drive this time rather than fly, is that there's a military and police presence that is intrusive and overwhelming. Every off-ramp, it seems, is a sign for another fort, another air base. America has built the largest and most invasive military in the world, squandering some $700 billion a year. And I've never seen so many police. You know, it used to be that you would drive across country and you would keep a keen eye in the rearview mirror if you were traveling more than 10 miles an hour over the speed limit for a cop that might come up behind you. But now they're just everywhere. And it's not a lone cop, but packs of them. And they're not coming up behind cars. No, they're using radar and airplane surveillance. Now, I didn't get a ticket on this trip, maybe largely because of the fact we were also ferrying my youngest son's old car, a 21-year-old car, across country, and I wasn't able to go very fast, no matter how fast we churned our feet beneath it. But nonetheless, it was invasive. There were some states that I just couldn't wait to get out of because the police presence was just so dominant. The other thing that struck me is that religious lies literally permeate the American landscape. And we'll speak of that in a moment, but Also, as I was listening to the radio to pass the time, struck me that the budget impasse and the ultimate capitulation occurred without any benefit of understanding or resolution in the face of what I saw as dictatorial demands. It was heartbreaking. It was almost as if putting these things together is if the last four generations of Americans, those in the midst of the educational process from articulate to 25 years old, who have been the most jaundiced by political correctness and an inability to think, being lured into a medicated state by all forms of narcotics, legal and illegal, as well as by completely irrational academic themes and a preference for video games that is also leaning towards the irrational. The 25 to 50 who have engaged in business during a time of declining fortunes, a group that is now more prone to be dependent on government than it is to be a contributor. The 50 to 75-year-olds who are largely responsible for the transition of America from an economic powerhouse to a parasitic economy, which has now been bypassed by so many others in the world. And then the elderly, the 75-plus generation, who was responsible for fighting wars that ought not have been fought, and for voting in politicians who created the Ponzi schemes that are now destroying our country. It's as if these four generations of Americans have been rendered incapable, or at the very least unwilling, to think. There is no interest in the cause of things, nor in the consequence of our actions. You know, the nation is bankrupt. And yet I hear constant debates on how to fix a website that was specifically designed to give away more money that the government does not have. You know, healthcare.gov, it doesn't work. But what's its purpose? Its purpose is to entice people who don't want to pay for or cannot pay for their own healthcare to get it free from a government that doesn't have any money, that's broke. We seem oblivious to the cost of Social Security and Medicare. We arrest and imprison the Bernie Madoffs of the world, the perpetrator of Ponzi schemes, yet we elect those who promise to advance the same kind of scheme when it's a government scheme. And that's really all Medicare and Social Security are. They are Ponzi schemes, where you pay out benefits to participants based upon the contributions of new enrollees. There's no investment. There is no fund. There's nothing here that is contributing anything to society. It's simply taking the money of those who are forced to play and giving it to those who want it. It's a Ponzi scheme. According to Thomas Jefferson, the greatest enemy of freedom is an established military. And yet, through propaganda, the world's largest, most deadly, most destructive, and by far most aggressive military on Earth is ubiquitously praised as the source of the nation's freedom, literally turning truth upside down. The vast preponderance of those that you witness, whether it be in advertising or in promotion or advocacy or patriotism, who, according to Thomas Jefferson, and he was right, are part of the organization that is most destructive of freedom, are praised for being the source of freedom, the military. And yet, with a standing army, as Jefferson wrote, there are taxes which deprive people of their earnings. There is debt which deprives our children of their future. There is propaganda to support the growing willingness to engage that military that lead to all sorts of erroneous conclusions. And there's a constant state of war, which empowers the central government and robs the freedoms and the independence of the people. Jefferson wrote of such things. He was articulate in such things. And yet America has built the largest military on earth. We seem incapable of understanding its consequence. Like, you know, we talk about World War II as if we did this grand solution for the world, and yet we don't understand that our response to Pearl Harbor was grotesquely immoral. We sacrificed over 300,000 lives trying to avenge the deaths of 3,000. Then you look at 9/11, where we invaded a country that had nothing to do with the bombing of our buildings. We exonerated the actual enemy. We lied about who perpetrated the attack and why it was commenced. We called Islam, the source of that attack, a great religion. And we not only invaded Afghanistan, making it now the most corrupt country on earth, making it the world's largest source of heroin, but we also pushed the Taliban out of Afghanistan, the very Taliban that we had once partnered with to fight the Russian-backed government in Afghanistan, into Pakistan, where they have created anarchy in a country that has nuclear weapons. It was a suicidal mission. And we invaded Iraq, breaking that country, unleashing a wrath of terrorism upon its people, annihilating the Christian population, sacrificing thousands of American lives, a million people overall, and $4 to $6 trillion of coin, all squandered. We don't seem to be able to make the connection between our actions and the consequence of our actions. Knowing how inappropriate these things were, admitting where we have gone wrong. So that once we understand what we have done that has been so disastrous, there might be hope to see a future that is more promising. I'm Yada, this is Shattering Myths. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're talking about the observations from my drive across America. One of the things that became a concern was the fact that everywhere I went, from billboards to public prayers at tables before meals, God's advice was mocked by those pretending to be godly. You know, God told us that he does not listen to the prayers of those who are not Torah observant. In fact, he never tells us to pray to him. He instead tells us to listen to him. And yet, everywhere I went, there were couples and large groups of people holding hands before their meals and out loud having a public prayer. They refer to their God as the Lord, which is Satan's title. They ended their prayer by saying Amen, which is the name of the sun god of Egypt, Amen-Ra. They didn't care that even their mischaracterization of Yahusha as Jesus told them not to pray in public. And yet they do it anyway, mocking God. All of the billboards, oh my goodness, all of them, promoting lies. It's easy to see how we have bought into the lie of religion as a nation, how we bought into the lie of the military being our savior as opposed to the source of our loss of freedoms, how we become a police state and not noticed, how we have come to the point that our politicians routinely lie to us, as do our religious leaders, as does the military, as does the media, and no one seems to care. Comatose. It's a common attribute of declining societies, that they tend to overlook all of the signs that they are in a death spiral because they can't imagine things being different than they were yesterday. It's this normalcy syndrome that, you know, it's been relatively like this. You know, of course, things have deteriorated. These are not the good old days. My taxes are higher. My earnings are lower. My home is worth less. My currency is worth less. My politicians are worth less. You know, it's our roads are decaying. Our power goes out more often. Yeah, I understand that things are not as good as they once were, but the decline has been so slow and gradual, so consistent in one direction, that it's just normal to expect these things. Let's hope for a better future. And yet what they don't recognize is that in the case of human societies, things do change overnight. In the case of America, the same thing will occur. From one day to the next, we will wake up and our currency will be worthless. We will no longer be the world's reserve currency. We have destroyed the value of our currency. And as a result, we will have anarchy here. We have put in place all of the mechanisms for a police state. We have gamed the judicial system so that it is no longer just. There will be no opportunity for recompense. We have created a spy mechanism that is capable of silencing anyone who would dare stand up and say the emperor has no clothes. And so we will go one day to the next. I can't tell you if it's going to happen in the next 5 years, the next 10 years, but it will certainly happen within the next 15 years. That the America we know today, the world as we know it today, will no longer exist. You will not wake up to normal anymore. And the vast majority of Americans in particular will have brought this on themselves, continuing to rob their children through Medicare and Social Security, through a grotesquely engorged military, through an unwillingness to consider the cause and consequence of the many events that are influencing their lives. Speaking of such events, one of the lead items in the news today is the French are upset that America, through its NSA, has been spying on millions of French citizens. French Foreign Minister Laurette Fabius, I love that last name, Laurette Fabius, has summoned U.S. Ambassador to account for the claims that the U.S. spied on millions of phone calls in France. France has labeled such activity between allies as unacceptable. Now, when we return to Shattering This, we'll consider the consequence of America's NSA, its government, choosing to spy on the French. Why it would do so. And if they will do it with the French, what next? Welcome back to Shattering This. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, I would encourage you to call toll-free, 877-300-7645. During the break, I received an email from one of our listeners that showed a picture taken along the roadside in Texas, where two things really are important in Texas. One is religion, the other is football. But this particular road sign, it says drive-through prayer, available Wednesdays 4 to 6 p.m. Drive-through prayer. Yes, why not? Returning to France, the Le Monde, which is a periodical in France, newspaper, said that based upon the leaks of Edward Snowden, the U.S. NSA, the National Security Agency, monitored the businesses and officials as well as just ordinary French citizens, millions of them. The intercepts were apparently triggered by certain keywords. The paper says that the National Security Agency spied on 70.3 million phone calls 70.3 million phone calls. Let me tell you, folks, even if there were 10 phone calls per person, there aren't 7 million terrorists in France. And this was in a 30-day period. They spied on 70 million phone calls. That's about the population, I suspect, of France. Over a 30-day period. Stunning, huh? Now, can you imagine the motivation for doing that? I mean, just think of it. I mean, the French, in World War I and World War II, the French couldn't protect themselves. Do you suspect that the National Security Agency of the United States needs to be spying on French officials and French businesses to keep America free? From what, a French invasion? I mean, for crying out loud. Who are you going to spy on next? The Mexicans? The Canadians? Oh, yeah, we're doing that too. How about the Brazilian? Yeah, we're doing that as well. When there is absolutely no justification for doing something, and you're only doing it because you can, and it's stealing information, this private information that you have no right to, that you're not entitled to, it shows the ultimate decay of our government. A government that is justifying spending our money to spy on us. Do you know that one of the releases that took place while I was driving across the country was that the U.S. government has used its control over Google and Gmail, over Microsoft and its not only Internet Explorer, but its email solution and others to confiscate people's address books, their contact lists. Yeah, your contact list has been seized by the U.S. government. One of the things that was determined by this particular investigation was that the NSA not only has the capability of, but has turned on the microphones in people's computers, particularly laptops, since they become so ubiquitous, to listen into what they're saying. They have activated the cameras on your laptop to watch what you're doing. You have no privacy anymore. This is by a government that has run completely amok, that is wholly out of control. The agency also, this would be the NSA, also captured millions upon millions of text messages. It is unclear whether the content of the calls and messages was stored or just the metadata was combed, nor is it clear who was trying to listen in on whom. And the paper did not say whether the operation codenamed US-985D was still in progress. The period where they spied on 70 million phone calls in addition to millions of text messages occurred between December 10th and January 8th of last year and this year, and there's no indication that it has ceased doing so. Mr. Flavius announced that he had summoned U.S. ambassadors to discuss these claims immediately. The Interior Minister, Manuel Valls, had earlier said that the allegations were shocking and added, if an allied country spies on France, this is totally unacceptable. Well, I mean, it's France for crying out loud. I mean, it would be unacceptable even for us to spy on China. And China really is the only potential foe in the sense of having a military that could be a threat to the United States. And yet, it'd be like spying on your bank when you're dependent upon them for financing your business and your home. You know, if you want to spy on somebody, you better not need them. In the case of France, they're meaningless. In the case of China, they're our source of funds. They provide the T-bills that keep the illusion of solvency afloat in America. There is no justification for doing any of this. The BBC's Christian Fraser in Paris says the outrage is largely for public consumption because the French government has been accused of running its own snooping operations similar to the United States. And I don't want to exonerate France. It's true, excuse me, that most governments are engaged in such malfeasance. The nature of government. There's a reason that Yahweh asked us to walk away from our country, from religion and politics, before we engage in a relationship with him. It's not just that the United States has lost its way, that the United States has become grotesquely immoral. So is France. The communications inside France, between France and other countries, are all monitored, Le Monde reported. Emails, text messages, telephone and internet browsing records are stored for years. Now, I want to be careful here. The excuse that the United States gave when this was first determined that we were spying on Germany, England, France, Brazil, Mexico, Canada, et al., was that, well, they're doing it too. It's the idea that, okay, this can't be bad because we're not the only ones doing it. So it's the group mentality that takes place like in after Katrina in New Orleans, where everybody started to loot. It can't be bad. I wasn't the only one doing it. Well, it is bad. And the fact that others are doing it is not justification for doing something that is wrong. This was a little editorial comment that was posted alongside this editorial or this article in the BBC. It says this is not the first time that the U.S. has been accused of spying on the French. Last year, the Elysee Palace confirmed that it had discovered a worm in the computers of the Elysee network that had the ability to collect files on a machine, take screenshots, even activate the microphone on a computer to record conversations. So the U.S. government planted a worm in the capital of France in the government computer to copy screenshots, to listen in to conversations, and to steal files. The U.S. embassy in Paris categorically denied that the U.S. had been involved in the cyber attack on the French government. Nonetheless, the finger was pointed at the United States by the French media, and most likely correctly so. On Monday morning, Laurent Flavius summoned the U.S. ambassador to an urgent meeting to request an explanation of these latest allegations from Le Monde, but then the French already knew the power of these surveillance programs because, according to Le Monde, they're running similar surveillance programs themselves. The latest revelations follow the claims in the German media that U.S. agents hacked into the email account of former President Felipe Calderon. We're out of control, and there is no effort to stop the confiscation of private information. One of the most interesting stories is that Dianne Feinstein, the chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, defending the spying on Americans, said that by doing so, we had thwarted a terrorist attack because a specific terrorist, she named one, she was asked to name a single event, that David Headley had been apprehended. And what's interesting is the head of National Security for America, James Clapper, met with the two former wives of David Headley, who both told him that David Headley was working for the Pakistani ISI and that the Pakistani ISI was planning a terrorist event of a considerable magnitude in Mumbai, India. It took place. Several hundred people were killed. The United States knew of it. The head of NSA knew of it in advance of it occurring. We did not tell the Indian government that it was going to occur. As a matter of fact, David Headley at the time was a double agent working not only for the Pakistani ISI, but also for the United States CIA. And this was the example of what our NSA spying mechanism on Americans was used to prevent a terrorist act, when it in fact is the story of an American double agent that planned a terrorist event that the United States government never divulged to the victims. I want to change the subject here to another great myth. This one is on global warming. Many of you may have followed the progress of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, and its meeting in Sweden recently to thresh out what they called a critical report on global warming. Well, scientists, damning the facts, have sought to present with greater certainty than ever the supposed role of human activities in rising temperatures. But the fact is, the temperatures have not been rising. That the whole notion of global warming has been a fraud from the beginning. And we will, in the next segment and perhaps into future programs, begin to unravel some of that fraud by considering not only the reports as to what happened in Sweden most recently, but what happened previously. Shattering Myths, I'm your host, Yetta. We are talking now about the myth of global warming. The scientific community on climate change met in Sweden here recently. Their role was to present with greater certainty than ever the propensity of human activities to create rising global temperatures. The only problem with that is that global temperatures are not rising. Many governments are now demanding a clearer explanation of the slowdown in temperature increases. Temperature increases have not slowed. The temperature is not increasing on the planet. You see, over the last 15 years, temperatures haven't changed one iota. And it's only during these last 15 years that we've actually had a reliable information that is widely enough distributed and appropriately enough collected to be able to determine whether or not the temperature of the planet is changing. And what we found is that it's not. As a matter of fact, most recently, it appears that the planet is cooling. You see, NASA, who buys in, of course, to all of this climate change and global warming myth, predicted some 20 years ago that based upon all of the information on global warming, that the Arctic would be ice-free this summer. That you'd be able to actually, not on a submarine, but on a surface vessel, cruise right across the North Pole during this summer. But rather than the Arctic being ice-free, as the scientific community had predicted this summer, there was actually a 60% increase in the amount of polar ice. A 60% increase in the amount of polar ice. Rather than a decrease to nothing. One participant told the BBC News that the pause would be the central piece of the summary. It was not. Researchers from all around the world work with the IPCC to review thousands of studies that are all published studies, and the only way that you can get your study published is to agree with global warming. If you present information that is counter to global warming, no matter how well researched, no matter how accurate the facts may be, you aren't published. So all they're reviewing is that which agrees with that which is enriching them. Its previous report of the overall state of climate science was published in 2007. It was instrumental in helping the panel share a Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah, that year. Yeah, unfortunately, the evidence underlying their conclusions was mostly destroyed. The methods that they used were highly suspect, and their conclusions turned out to be completely false. But once a lie such as global warming is established, it is almost impossible to dislodge in this way. These kind of lies are similar to propaganda lies, like your military is providing your freedoms when they're robbing you of your freedom, like your religion will save you when it damns you. In its last report in 2007, the IPCC stated that the warming of the climate system is unequivocal. And yet, it was not true. I mean, not only was it not unequivocal, it's not true. In fact, new estimates were given for the scale of global warming and its impact on sea levels, glaciers, and ice sheets, except for the fact that the evidence no longer supports any of these claims. They said that the observed increase in global average temperatures since the mid-20th century is very likely due to the observed increase in anthropogenic greenhouse gas concentrations. Anthro is from the Greek term meaning man. Progenic meaning from the genesis of man. That is our greenhouse gases that are causing global warming. Except there is no global warming. When we return to Shattering Myths, we will turn the page and consider Yahweh's testimony. But between now and then, keep these thoughts in mind. We will return to them tomorrow and continue to dispel the myth of climate change and understand why it's being perpetrated.